Hi, I'm Justin Tinsley. You might know me from my work at Anscape, or as the author of a Biggie Smalls biography, or from my mostly victorious appearances on Around the Horn. So you're going to be hearing different voices hosting ESPN Daily for the near future. And guess what? I'm one of them. I'll be pitching in for the rest of the week, helping this pod do what it's always done. Tell the best sports stories in audio day in and day out. Hope you enjoy. Baxter Holmes, thanks for joining us today. You know, I think it's worth pointing out that after a couple of weeks at the helm of this podcast, I'm actually going to be stepping away for a bit. I guess you can call it some scheduled maintenance for me.
It sounds like load management is what you're talking about there.
It's funny you mention that. That's the NBA's least favorite phrase, load management, something you wrote about in depth on ESPN.com. You paint a scene at the very beginning of the story. It's a January game between the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. That exciting young core that they have in Cleveland facing the defending champs. But what actually did we end up getting in this game?
Well, it was the Warriors, the defending champs, only trip of the season to Cleveland. I'm sure fans there were excited to see some of the Warriors' biggest stars, but they were on the bench. Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson all sat out. Now, this is in no small part because of what happened the night before in Boston. They played a thrilling overtime game against the Celtics, and Curry, Green, and Thompson all logged heavy minutes. They fly out for the second of a back-to-back, the last of a five-game road trip. They get into Cleveland after 2 a.m., hit the pillows around 3. And Steve Kerr decides, you know, for the sake of the Warriors' health, with this aging but dynamic trio that's helped them to 4 championships, he's going to give them the night off.
You just mentioned Steve Kerr, but what exactly was that reasoning for giving that aging trio the night off?
Well, he called it, this is a brutal part of the business, before the game. And he said, we have so much more data, so much more awareness of players' vulnerability.
It's proven that, you know, if guys banged up back-to-backs, players are much more likely to get injured and miss more games. And so that's why you're seeing league-wide, everybody is being cautious when a guy's banged up.
You're just playing the long game, he said.
There's obviously a fan aspect to this as well, Baxter. You know, if I'm a fan living in Cleveland, I circle the Warriors on my calendar because I want to see the Splash Brothers. They're like Christmas. They only come around once a year. But that also seems like it's being treated as the cost of doing business, right?
Absolutely. And Kerr addressed us before the game.
I feel terrible for fans who buy tickets who are expecting to see someone play. And they don't get to see that person play. It's a brutal part of the business.
We've seen images of fans with poster boards throughout arenas. You know, I drove X amount of miles or flew X amount of miles to see X star play, and they're not there. And that's obviously a significant investment on the fans' part. And Adam Silver addressed this in Salt Lake City in February during the All-Star break.
I understand it from a fan standpoint that if you are particularly buying tickets to a particular game and that player isn't playing, I don't have a good answer for that other than this is a deep league with incredible competition.
But as we know, this is a star-driven league. That's who people want to see. And in games where they're not there, it stands out. I interviewed CJ McCollum, New Orleans Pelicans guard, president of the Players Union, and he said, quote, "You understand the effects that this is having on our business. Obviously, we're looking forward to figuring out ways to continue to keep our players healthy and safe. But we do know that this is an issue. We're not blind to that. It's something that is affecting our game and having a negative impact on our game." Now, around the league and throughout the season, we've kind of seen this talking point, you know, pandered throughout media and social media about players potentially being soft and not wanting to play. I've covered health and science for about 10 years in the NBA. I thought there was a lot more to it than that. So I called up a lot of people who work in the league, specifically on the medical side, to get their answer. And yes, this is a major point of emphasis, a major issue, but it goes a lot deeper than quote-unquote players being soft.
As exciting as this NBA season has been, there's still a two-word euphemism that the league just can't seem to shake off. Load management. In a league where fans buy tickets or tune in specifically to see a handful of superstars, no one is happy when they spend the game on the bench. So today, Baxter Holmes tells us what he found out while researching the NBA's biggest problem and whether anyone has a decent solution for it. I'm Justin Tinsley. It's Friday, April 7th. This is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All right, Baxter, so I gotta ask you this. The conversation around load management has been going on for years now. But why does it feel like we're talking about it more and more every year? Like, how did it get to this point?
Well, look, the concept of load management has been around for a while. We've seen the Spurs do this for years with Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili kind of resting them strategically. So this concept isn't new. But what has changed certainly now is the NBA is punishing teams for resting their stars. This ties back to some rules that they've implemented in recent years, but there's kind of a confluence of events that have led to this point. And what we know now, right, there's 27 NBA All-Stars this year using All-Star selections plus injury replacements that have combined to miss more than 400 games. That's the second highest combined total for an NBA season, according to the Elias Sports Bureau. The most came last season, which was impacted by the pandemic, and that number was All-Stars missing a combined 434 games.
Wow. Like, now, to be fair, it's not like the NBA hasn't tried to mitigate this. They've done things like fine teams for resting healthy players and reducing the number of back-to-backs teams have on their schedule. But you got to be real with me, Baxter. How effective have these tactics actually been?
Well, the NBA has worked in the margins where it can. For instance, like a decade ago, the average team played 19.1 back-to-backs. This season, that number is down to 13.3. Gone away with stretches of four games and five nights, five games and seven nights. They've reduced travel with respect when teams are playing on back-to-backs. So they've made a lot of efforts there, but it's still an 82-game season. And this is kind of where the rubber meets the road for a lot of people. I've talked to people who said, the schedule is much better. These little, you know, efforts that they've made here and there with back-to-backs or trying to trim density of schedule has made a difference, but we're still looking at 82 games.
So knowing all of that, Baxter, why are players still missing more games than ever before now?
Let's start before players even get into the league. We have the specialization in youth sports. You have some players starting as young as 7 years old, playing year-round basketball all the way up until they get to the NBA, and a number of health officials in the league office, around the NBA, worked for individual teams, worked for individual players, have told me that this remains a major issue in the NBA. Guys are basically coming into the league, run down, some are broken down, and you put them in an 82-game schedule, that's not good. Also, the NBA is so much faster than it was two decades ago or even a decade ago. Pace has continuously risen. This is a point that many people around the league made to me. The game is so much faster now. You know, if you look back in the 90s, you know, guys coming up the court, often dumping the ball down to a center and watching two guys go one-on-one. There's so much more cutting and screening and moving and running. The game is so much more dynamic and ballistic. That is very hard on the body. We've talked about the issues with the schedule. If you take the first two factors that I mentioned, that's going to make these things kind of amplified in a way. And people talked about, look, we're coming out of a stretch you know, playing through the pandemic, you know, stops and starts, condensed schedules, people kind of being worn down by all the issues tied to health and safety protocols and everything else. So these things taken together have kind of led us to this moment where you have a lot of stars missing out games more than before. And I talked to Joe Dumars in the league office, and he specifically touched on how people kind of compare eras and how it's not fair. He said, in particular, my generation, I played basketball, football, and baseball. I played all sports. I wasn't on the basketball court 365 days a year. And he said, so even when I was president of the Pistons, I was seeing guys 8, 9, 10 years ago coming in, and their bodies, you could tell there was a lot more mileage on them already at 20 and 21 years old. So these issues are very real. They're modern issues, and they make comparing today's game with the game from any other period, the 90s, the 80s, which people like to point to, just very black and white. It doesn't work. There was an interesting point that a few different team health officials made to me in comparing errors. Yes, there was a physicality aspect back then, but what is harder, taking a forearm shiver from Charles Oakley or the amount of mileage and accelerations and decelerations of everybody in the game now? Like, yeah, that forearm shiver from Oakley might hurt, but is it going to limit your ability to play over the course of a season? Is it going to potentially limit the amount of games you play over the course of your career? No, it's just very different.
There's a quote in your article that I thought was very telling, and it really just supports what you just said. A veteran Eastern Conference team official said, it's very rare to have a kid come into the NBA compound with a pristine health history and nothing in his background. So when we look at guys like, you know, Chet Holmgren, who unfortunately missed this entire season, and we see Wembanyama getting ready to come over as the presumptive number one pick in this draft, how does that complicate things like scouting and draft assessments?
Very much so. I mean, teams have told me that they are looking much more closely at how much mileage, essentially, young players have coming into the league. And at the combine, which you just mentioned, I've talked to health officials who describe still having to, quote, red flag players because they will assess basically their movement, their ability to, you know, the health of their knees, their ankles, their hips. Can they stand on one leg? Can they perform a squat? Does it appear like they are, once they get into the NBA schedule, at risk for a catastrophic injury? And those things are still very real. People know how hard the 82-game schedule is. Joe Dumars talked about this at length. When you look at how fast the game is at this point, when you look at the kind of players that are coming into the league right now and the kinds of health issues that they're bringing with them, it is concerning.
Coming up, how the league and the players are trying to fix load management once and for all.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Okay, Baxter, so earlier we mentioned some of the things the league has tried to do to discourage load management. But I want to talk about the most ambitious attempt we've seen thus far, which came with the announcement of a new CBA agreed to between the NBA and the NBA Players Association. This made it mandatory for a player to have played at least 65 games to be eligible for postseason awards like MVP and all NBA teams. So my question to you is this: how significant is that number 65?
It's significant. So as we're recording this right now, let's look at the top three leading NBA MVP candidates, all right? Giannis, he's played in 63 games right now. Joel Embiid, he's played in 65. Jokic, he's played in 68. And the season is almost over. It's going to wrap up in a couple days. So they are right there at that line. Now, this particular standard, I mean, make no mistake, this is aimed at creating incentives for stars to play in more games. It's tied to NBA MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player, the All-NBA and All-Defensive Teams. Now, there are some qualifications here. I want to be clear about that. So players must play 20 minutes per game for it to count as a game, except in two of the 65 games, a player can play between 15 and 20 minutes and it will still count. That's kind of important because you could have the instance of a player like just checking into the game, checking out and trying to have that qualify, but that's not necessarily the case right here.
Let's stay on 65 for a second. Now, the other aspect to this 65-game barrier is how these awards factor into player contracts. There are incentives that tie into Supermax eligibility that could be impacted here.
Yes, absolutely. The Supermax is tied into MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, and all NBA honors. Now, this was a rule from 2017. So the 65-game criteria will be tied into that. Now, out of the past 11 Supermax vet contracts, only Joel Embiid would have been impacted. And again, we talked about earlier, certain conditions and qualifying factors that go into, you know, the 65 games. Like if you're injured or if there's other things going on, it's not just black and white. There are some conditions there. But the ramifications here financially for some of these players is significant.
So you mentioned in your piece that teams are trying to find that sweet spot where players can play as many games as possible while minimizing injury. What are some of the ways that they've done that?
Well, there's very few practices and shoot-arounds these days. You'll notice that in talking to teams all throughout the time. You get email updates about media availability, and you'll see no practice, no shoot-around. So teams are trying to find ways to rest. But it's complicated because you're going on a day-to-day basis with individual player health. And some teams have the long view, as Steve Kerr talked about at that game in Cleveland. They're trying to rest players and have them fresh for a postseason run, especially if you have veteran players. Other teams, let's just be honest, they're tanking.
Right.
They're sitting out key guys towards the end of the season, trying to improve their draft position. So it's not as if these players have the ultimate say-so on whether they're going to play or not. Some of these decisions are coming from on high in the organizations themselves.
I've been watching basketball all my life, so this question I'm about to ask, I can't even fathom a reality where this happens. But would the league ever consider playing less than 82 games?
I think so. Yeah.
Wow.
Adam Silver said at All-Star Weekend, I'll never say never about reducing the schedule. And look, there have long been calls from people in the medical community and throughout teams, and Steve Kerr even made mention of it at that game in Cleveland.
That's why I'm going to continue to advocate for 72-game seasons. I know that means less revenue, but at some point, I think there just needs to be an awareness from everybody involved, the league, players, coaches, performance staff. Like, let's be really smart. Let's take care of these guys.
But this is really where the rubber meets the road. Everyone says we don't expect the league will ever do that because you take games off the schedule, you're going to take money out of people's pockets potentially. But then there's a flip side to that argument. And people have said, and I heard it all throughout this story, and even when it was published, I had people around the league reach out and make this point to me, that actually, no, if we reduce the schedule, players can be more rested. You'll have higher quality of play. Teams can figure out ways to increase ticket prices here and there to try to make up for reduction in revenue or tickets, you know, ticket losses, what have you. And overall, we may be extending the life of some of these star players or extending their careers in the NBA. And by doing that, we're going to end up making more money on the back end. But as a lot of things go in this world, it all comes down to money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really where the heart of the issue is.
So let me ask you something else, because I understand the issue here. And look, I get it. Sports are a billion-dollar business. But if I'm a coach, isn't it my job to make the decisions that most benefit the team? Like, if I think about the best course moving forward, and that's the rest of the player, shouldn't I just block out the outside noise and just do it?
Yeah, Justin, you bring up a great point. Now, an organization has to do what's best for a player's health, and the player has to do that as well. To do otherwise is just purely negligent. You don't want to put somebody out there, they're at risk for a major injury, they suffer it. Everybody loses in that scenario. Now, teams have really invested in health and sports medicine and sports science, let's say in the past, 10, 15 years, more than ever. The size of the staffs on these organizations is aggressive. They're bringing over people from Premier League Soccer. They're bringing over people from Australia. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and I've had some people say maybe we have too many cooks or too much data, too much of this or that. But people on these teams have said, if we see something where a player is at risk, we are going to make the decision that they're not able to play that night. And that sometimes that's with players even wanting to say that they can play. And a team will put up a stop sign. Now, these are collaborative decisions as well with the player, the agent, the coach, the front office, even ownership, as well as the sports medicine and sports training staff. But everybody has to be on the same page.
And I think your piece did an amazing job showing that, it's not just cut and dry. If I feel like we're better off resting my 35-year-old superstar, isn't that my call to make?
Yes, absolutely. And you probably have access to data, science, medicine, also just talking to the player, getting a sense of how they're feeling. If you're around them on a day-to-day basis, you know how they're moving. And you know if they're not moving right, or if they don't look right, or if they look like they're at risk of something major. Teams, look, the contracts are so high.
Yeah.
You're investing so much in these players. Why would you want to do anything that potentially puts them at risk? And just think of it from a financial standpoint. And why would the player, who's obviously investing so much in themselves, why would they want to put themselves at risk? It doesn't make sense.
Baxter, there's one word you use to describe load management repeatedly in this piece: unfixable. So, not to go full doomsday or day after tomorrow scenario, do you really think there's no solution here, or are we overthinking this whole thing?
It's tough, Justin. A lot of people said, look, if we reduce the schedule maybe to 72 games or 70 games, maybe we could fix this whole thing. But it's also theoretical. Like, we don't really know what that would look like. And maybe if the league did that, we could be in a very different kind of place. But the thing that was kind of striking to me was when I talked to people all around the league, stakeholders and whatnot, nobody could really point to a viable solution beyond potentially reducing the schedule. And everybody always, made the same point. If we reduce the schedule, it takes money out of people's pockets, at least initially. So that's probably going to be a non-starter. So where do we go from here? And that's where you got a lot of silence. Nobody really knew what the potential solution could be. But take a step back and think about it like this. I had a GM once tell me the most important ability is availability. It really doesn't matter how talented or skilled or what have you a player is or a team is. If their best players aren't able to play, nothing else really matters. So this is a very, very huge issue that really gets at the center of what matters most in the NBA. CJ McCollum told me, quote, "We want to be able to provide entertainment for our fans, but we also don't want to jeopardize the health of our players." So figuring out that balance, what that looks like, is important for us. And I don't think there's one answer. I think that kind of summed up what a lot of people said to me. There's certainly frustration around the league about this whole issue, but I haven't talked to a single person who has made me optimistic, I would say, that we're going to find a solution in the immediate future. That's not to say that we may not find it in the distant future, but in the immediate future, I'm not sure how we get there.
So I want to ask a big picture question. We're having this conversation in 2023. We've had this conversation in 2012 and even before that. So what does this conversation of load management look like, let's say 5-10 years down the line?
That's a really good question. And it makes me wonder, like, what kinds of advancements in science and medicine and technology are going to be available by teams then? Will there be some kind of breakthrough? I will say, I had people say, we need more studies on this to really understand the effectiveness of it. But in the same breath, I'd have other people say to me, you know, it's really hard because every single player is going to have a different health profile. You know, genetically, they're going to be different. Like, it's really hard to compare individual players to another. They come from different places. You know, comparing players from America to players from Europe and the systems that they grew up in basketball is going to be very different. So it's hard to do analyses, so to speak, like on the league at large. But the rate at which there's been advancements in science and medicine and technology have been aggressive. And we may get to more of a point then. But to end on a bit of optimism, I will note there are more people that care about this now than I think ever before.
Mm.
I don't think the league wants fans spending X amount of dollars coming to games and they're not getting to see the players that they paid money to see. I think the league is aware of this effect on the overall product. I'm hopeful that the right minds can find an answer down the road. I'm just not sure what it looks like.
Baxter, incredible work on your piece that's on ESPN.com right now, and incredible work here. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Justin. I appreciate it.
I'm Justin Tinsley. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Bradford Craig, Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Heather Lombardo, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andre Soto, Andy Tennant, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Deontay Epps, Kendall Majette, Rebecca Preston, and Jackson Ugello. I'll be handing the mic over now to the wonderful, my homegirl, Emily Kaplan, who'll be your host next week. She'll talk to you on Monday.